Welcome to the Hockey Strength Podcast, the official podcast of the world's best resource for hockey strength and conditioning information. HockeyStrengthAndConditioning.com.
Hello, ladies and germs, and welcome to another episode of the Hockey Strength Podcast. Today, we're starting a special series. Mike and I sat down and thought about what we want to do with the podcast, and we came up with the idea of doing a SCAF alumni series. Over the course of the next several episodes, Mike and I will be interviewing together former NHL strength coaches. For the first episode of our alumni series, Mike and I sat down with Lorne Goldenberg. He has over 20 years of NHL experience, spanning from 1986 with the St. Louis Blues all the way to 2010 with the Montreal Canadiens, with many teams and jobs in between. In addition to a lengthy NHL strength and conditioning career, he's also an award-winning strength and conditioning coach and best-selling author, and the president and owner of Strength Tech, that's TEK, Fitness and Wellness Consultants. Lorne is a guy who has done just about everything in our industry, and he's one of those people that when he talks, you're going to want to listen, as I know I did. Just one more thing before we get started, though. If you could leave a review for our podcast on iTunes or Spotify or wherever you're listening, it would help us out a ton. We don't have advertisers right now. We don't have sponsors for the podcast, and that is to enhance your listening experience. So if you could throw us a review, we would really appreciate it. It would help us out a ton. With that, here is episode number 99 of the Hockey Strength Podcast and episode number 1 of the SCAF Alumni Series with Mike Potenza and Lorne Goldenberg. Welcome, everybody, back to the Hockey Strength Podcast. This is episode number 99. Today's a special, special episode. We have Mr. Lorne Goldenberg here along with Mike Potenza. So we have three generations of strength coaches. We have Mike, who's around Gen X. We have me, I'm a baby. And then we have Lorne, who probably saw the Germans march into Paris. I don't know. So we got a lot of fun discussion up ahead. Lorne, thank you so much for being here. How are you?
Hey, I'm great. Really pumped to be here with you guys tonight, and really impressed with what you guys are doing with this whole project and hockey and strength conditioning. It's not unlike something that Peter Twist and I had thought about way back in the 80s, and you guys have really taken it over the top. So top of my hat to you guys.
Awesome. Thanks for being here. And Lorne, you're one of the guys that when I was in the field and interested in hockey training, I would follow you. I knew that you were in Florida and Ottawa, and it's kind of cool looking back to the places you have been with so many teams, and obviously it's a credit to what you do and what you know and what you can share with hockey players from a performance side. But you and Peter Twist and obviously Mike Boyle, and at the time Matty Nichol was the younger guy that I kind of knew and followed when I was at Wisconsin. So it's pretty special to have been on a podcast with you and Scotty Livingston, and then now to have you here and pick your brain a little bit and see kind of the similarities of what still goes on. Hey, post game pizza is still here, so that hasn't changed. And I'm sure it was around when you first started too. So,
and back then it was chanchou and that's hot dogs for you guys who don't understand French and the old Colisée in Quebec. Yeah. The best hot dogs in the league.
Yeah, awesome.
Well, Lorne, I'll start us off. Just looking at your LinkedIn, you've a long time ago worked in the NHL long before being an NHL strength coach was really a thing. So I'm curious, what was it like to get that first NHL strength coach job? What was the process to even get that going?
Well, it was, there was no email back then and there was no internet. It was a matter of just trying to get mailing addresses of all the hockey teams at the time. And I can remember back then you would literally, dial the area code and like 41, the equivalent 555-1212 with the area code. And I'd like the phone number for the administration offices for the St. Louis Blues. And I literally went through the whole league at the time, verbally got everybody's address, sent letters out to absolutely everybody. And, you figure you got to get lucky with one of those things. And at the time, I was working for the Ottawa 67s and I was working with Gary Roberts, and there were some guys that I was working with who were starting to make their way to the NHL. So kind of people were slowly hearing about me. And then It was such a funny thing because I was working at a Nautilus Center at Carleton University here in Ottawa, and Don Johnson, the head of the sports medicine clinic there, just came into the facility and said, "Hey," he goes, "I think you might be up for an NHL job." And I said, "Really?" He goes, "Yeah." He goes, "Jacques Martin from the St. Louis Blues called me yesterday and talked to me." And then the next day, the football coach, Ace Powell, comes walking and he goes, "Goldie, I think you're up for an NHL job." Nobody had called me to this point, right? So I'd never heard of this before. They're calling references before they're actually talking to you to see if there's an interest. And anyways, a couple of days after that, I got like a phone call from Jacques Martin and ended up speaking to him for over an hour on the phone about, you know, my background, his background, the Ottawa connections, hockey, what have you. And he said, "Look," he goes, "I'm a real big believer in off-ice training and how it can contribute to, you know, player development. And keep an eye on the playoffs." They were playing the Leafs that year. He said, "If we lose, it's there's a good chance we bring you in." And it was a couple nights later, they did lose. And I got a call 2 days later. And 2 days after that, I was on a flight from Ottawa to St. Louis. And I got my first job. So it was cool. It was very cool. You know, when you think about how guys get jobs now, I mean, it's very similar, but that was one job where I didn't know anybody. Like it was just like a cold letter. And I think because I was an Ottawa guy and he actually coached Gary Robertson Jr. There was a bit of a connection.
Yeah. And you were the 67s at the time too.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah. Now, what was the climate? Like, how many strength coaches were there in the league at the time?
You know what? There wasn't a lot. There was myself. There was, oh my gosh, I just lost his name. He was in Buffalo forever.
Doug McKinney.
He was in, I want to say it was Hartford at the time. There was a guy named Pat Croce in Philadelphia. There was another guy, Dmitry Lapushin.
Yep.
Who was in with the Devils. Dimitri was an awesome guy. And I wasn't aware of too many other guys at that time. There might have been, but you know, my only source at the time were media guides. You know, those media guides, like they used to come, Mike, you might remember, they'd come in a big box and they'd be all lined up and on everybody's shelf.
They were thick, like they were 8.5 by 12, a thick binder, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And I
spiral ring. He doesn't know what those are, but you know, we they held up a lot of desks.
Yeah, I literally went through every single one of those because I was curious how many teams had it, and I can only remember like three or four other teams. So and the environment was so different. Like I was kind of like the evil guy, like, "Oh, a fitness guy, I don't want to talk to you." Like, you know, from the GMs and the assistant GM, like. The only people who wanted to talk to me were the coaches at the time. And even the trainers, the medical trainers, had no interest in what I wanted to do. Like I was a threat. I was a threat to them. So, you know, I remember getting toured in the old stadium in St. Louis, and I walked into this gym, which is underneath some stairs. It was just like, I mean, I've got a significantly better gym in the basement of my house right now than the St. Louis Blues had in 87. And it took a while for them to come around and do some investments. And I remember battling, you know, like we had like a old leg extension, a bicep curl, some rusty dumbbells. And I remember they were getting like VCRs, right? So the players could watch TV and tapes in the gym, but there wasn't hardly enough room for anybody to be in a gym. I'm like, "Give me that money from the VCR. I want to buy some equipment." So that was, it was a tough go back in the day.
Did you always have as much support from guys like Jock or coaches like as you were coming up? Like to have someone support you in that manner with something so foreign as training back then was a gift, right? Yeah. Your first job.
Yeah. Yeah. And I had, you know what, I was really lucky because I know, you know, as the job evolved or started to evolve, I want to say like late 80s, early 90s, mid 90s, a lot of the strength coaches got kind of piled in, if you will, with the medical training equipment staff. And I know just from my experience that a lot of guys, you know, those guys looked at the strength coach as like, oh, you're just another hand to kind of help us do our job. They'd never help you do your job, right? They weren't putting weights away or, you know, counting reps or spotting or anything, but you were a help there. And I was really fortunate in that I was always more on the coaching staff side early on, you know, talking about players, what they've done, where they are, where they need to go, how they're going to get there, what it'll do to contribute to where the coach sees them being. And that was tough because I think I was seen as more of an outsider to the equipment and the medical guys than anything else. And I remember one thing I learned in my second job with the Chicago Blackhawks, and Mike Keenan was a huge fitness guy. And I was only working as a consultant with the Blackhawks. So I was in and out of town all the time. And he brought me in, he goes, I want to talk to you. I think we got a full-time job for you. We're going to bring you in full-time. And I said, okay, well, I'll talk to you in a couple of weeks. And so we're going through training camp, comes into the camp, he brings me to his office. And I'm like, so tell me about the job. And he's like, okay, well, you're going to do strength and conditioning. And then you're also going to go to the airport to pick up the visiting team's bags with a truck, like at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. And I was like, you know, 27, 28 years old. I'm like, I'm in. Like, I just wanted to move to Chicago. I want to get out of Ottawa. I'm in. And Mike was a weird guy sometimes, you know, like he literally stopped mid-sentence. He stopped looking at me. He was just looking at the ceiling, and he comes back to me and he says, you're not doing that job. You didn't go to school. You didn't get a degree to go pick up bags at an airport at 2 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
He said, we're going to keep it the way it is right now. We'll figure it out. We'll find a way. And, you know, and that just kind of kept on. Whatever team I ended up going to, I ended up being more on the coach's side versus the medical or equipment side, if you will.
Yeah.
What about, you said it was hard to get buy-in with, like, you had the athletic trainers and the coaches. What about for the players? What was your perception of getting them to understand the role of strength conditioning early on?
Well, with the younger guys, it was a lot easier. With some of the older guys, there were guys like, you know, Bernie Federko and Brian Sutter. You know, those guys they'd been in the league, you know, 12, 15 years. And I remember one time Brian came to me in a workout in our first training camp, and he just kind of whispered in my ear. He said, hey, Goldie, he goes, I've been here 15 years. He goes, just pull it back a little bit, because there's nothing I'm going to do right now that's going to keep me in the league any longer.
You know? So. And his workouts were on the farm, probably.
He
was doing his summer training, that's for sure.
100%.
Yeah.
And so, you know, there were learning experiences like that. I remember in Chicago also, like, you know, we had a really good team in Chicago, and Dennis Savard was one of the leaders, and he was like super skilled guy. And I got along pretty good with him, but I remember it was at training camp where we were doing, you know, two-a-days that nobody really wanted, but they agreed to. And we were on the bikes, like after the second practice, and, you know, they had to ride at a certain level of KP. You had like those old Monarch bodyguard bikes. And Dennis Savard kept turning the tension down on the bike. And I walked back up and I said, Savvy, come on. And I would turn attention back up and I'd walk away. And then finally, after the second or third time, he's like, Goldie, come here for a second. He goes, look, he goes, we really like you. We think you're a good guy and you know what you're doing. But like, sometimes you don't have to be Keenan and just like give us a bit of a break. <You know? laughs> So I remember backing off of that and tried to be a little sensitive at the same time.
That's cool.
You think that in the long run, going easy on the guys helped build that relationship with them and ended up being a positive?
I would certainly think so. I mean, you know, Mike, you'll know, like, this business is all about relationships. Like, you know, I mean, you can't be best friends with these guys, but they need to, I really think they need to like you first. And then if they like you and you can build that relationship, then you can get them to buy into what you're selling. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but.
No, I agree. Like, you can, you know, you're going to know when to pull the rope and, you know, or, you know, use the stick or the carrot, if you will, you know, and most of the time the coaches are driving them pretty hard. So you have to know when to back off, but, you know when to get your intensity in too. So
yeah.
With them a lot of the time, most of the time, probably. So what do you see different now, Lauren? Like, well, from when workouts now, if you were to go back into your files, right, your 3-ring binders of workouts way back when, and see your workouts that you wrote in late 80s, early 90s, as to how you would program it differently now, or your last few seasons in the league with Montreal, or being around guys in Pittsburgh, like, what, how would they be different, like, from the structure, you know, and exercises and things like that?
Well, I think I've learned that you can get a lot done in a short period of time if you're coaching them up well. So a lot of high quality over quantity used to be, like, you weren't getting them to work very hard when it was still a tough sell early on. You threw everything at them, hoping they're going to get some benefits out of it, right? And now I think they understand that it's part of the game. It's part of preparation. So you can be very more specific and lower that volume of work that we used to do. And I think that's probably one of the biggest ones. And just getting guys to be real focused and dialed in when they get in there. Yeah.
What are some of the big trends, like? You know, if we use, example would be like FMS coming in, you know, into our world, our profession. And it was really a time when everybody started to rethink, all right, some sort of screen assessment or things like that. What are some, from your time, what were some of the biggest trend changing type things in your world? Was it, were you always a strength-based kind of weight room based program? Or did you go down the road of having a little bit of Nautilus machine, Cybex machine, as they kind of came into the fitness world back then?
Well, it's funny you say that, because I actually started, I was a Nautilus guy when I first started, and when I did the work with the Auto 67s, it was all Nautilus type stuff, and then that evolved, you know, into, you know, integrating plyometrics into it, medicine ball work, Olympic style weightlifting. I became a, you know, I'm still big on Olympic style weightlifting. You know, again, with the right volume. But I think the trend that I saw as it grew for me is, well, two things. One, the staffs changed, right? Where it used to be, there was just like one guy on the strength staff. And then all of a sudden, some teams started getting one guy, an assistant, or like even a volunteer assistant or an intern. And then all of a sudden there was two full-time guys. And then there's a sports performance guy. So the staff has really become a real staff, the sports performance staff, compared to the 90s for sure. Like, you know, I remember back in the 90s, my, if you want to call it a sports performance staff, was made up of the professors from the University of Laval, the medical doctors when they did their medicals, and the, you know, the medical trainer that I had there. We were kind of like a team together, but still working out in silos, if you will. I did work pretty close with the guy, Jean-May Simoneau, who was the PhD, the physiologist that I worked with at Laval. He was really good and really helpful, worked closely with the coaching staff. But seeing how you know, the staffs have evolved over time, that's a big one too. And then the other one is the more, you know, spending more time with guys as the years went on, doing deeper individualized assessments to really find out, you know, who cares what their, you know, velocity is, might be on a jump squat or their vertical jump or how much they can bench press. Let's look at and see what are their restrictions in their hips and their back and their shoulders, the thoracic spine, that's limiting their ability to, you know, move effectively in play. So I think that one is probably, one of the more significant trends that I've seen over over time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just one thing, looking at your resume, very impressive resume, is you jumped around a lot of teams. We already mentioned St. Louis, Chicago. You also worked for the Panthers, and I can't even list them all. Maybe you can help me out. Panthers, Canadians, of course.
Blackhawks, Blues.
Basically the whole league.
Nordiques,
an extinct team. Look at that, an extinct team. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
This
is actually my team I was most proud of. Like I spent 5 years with those guys and saw them go from a last place team to winning a President's Trophy and really competing. And then the year, go figure, the year they moved to Denver, and I tell them I'm not going to take the job. I can't move to Denver. And they win a Stanley Cup. I'm like losing my mind.
But I'm sure you were happy for the guys, and I
was happy for the guys. And I remember the last time Pittsburgh won the cup, and it was in our facility in Pittsburgh. And I got a picture with the cup, pointing my finger right to Skip Allen's name for that 95 Stanley Cup win. And I'm like, this should be my name, but
that's funny. So I guess my question is, why did you jump around so many teams? Did you feel like that was a positive experience to get to work in different environments for different head coaches? Did you learn different things from someone like Mike Keenan compared to other head coaches? Just what was that dynamic like of every few years moving on to another team?
Well, the big reason was that they kept wanting me to score goals and I just couldn't do it. But
I hope they don't ask me to do that. They'd be in trouble.
Hey, Mike, how many times have you had a player ask you, how many goals did the barbell score tonight?
Yeah, and I tell them, Dougie Waite scored a lot of goals. So we really want to be technical about it.
Oh, God. Well, like the moving around from team to team is really more of a function of, the game and how quickly things change in management. And there's certainly a job or two that I got let go for reasons that I thought were good reasons for me standing up to what the issue was at the time. And if it was to happen again, I would do the same thing, because that's just the way I am. But, when a coach gets fired or a GM gets fired, and this game's all about relationships, you kind of just, go where they go. And I think it's just the nature of the game more than anything else. And, the last job that I had with the Canadians, I remember, that's just when Gary Roberts was actually starting up his company. He was just retiring. That was, the summer 2010, I think it was. And, anyways, we had one guy in Montreal, one guy. Everybody else had left, and the GM was kind of like, we really need you to stay in Montreal and work with this one guy. And this one guy was not going to be, a difference maker for the Canadians. And my kids were in Ottawa, and I knew I was going to have this opportunity to kind of grow with Gary. And I just said, I'm good. Let's just kind of move on. And it was a better opportunity for me at the time. So,
yeah.
Is that something you're cynical about with the NHL industry, I suppose, the coaching industry, that it's just so volatile? Or is that just something you, maybe Mike, you can speak to this too, or is that something you just like accept as part of the job if you want to be an NHL strength coach or an NHL coach, period, that the volatility of the job is just comes with it?
I think so. I think, you're kind of hired to be fired in sports, and it's just the nature of the beast. I mean, Mike is so lucky. I think Mike's longevity in San Jose goes to his skill set, his personality, because he survived a lot of coaches on that team. So, Mike,
I just know where to hide when the shit hits the fan. Pretty good. I got some good hiding places. I found those my first year, but I mean, David, you're right. It's the same for me and Lauren. Like, it's not going to end well if it has to come to an end, and if you can walk away and on your terms, hey, great. Like that's icing on the cake, I guess, you know. But, you know, right now we have a lot of guys in the league that are, I mean, this is my 15th season, but, you know, Sean Skane's got 17 seasons, and Reg Grant had almost, I think he had 20. David Good has 20. Roger Takahashi in Vancouver's got close to 20. Mark Nemish has got 20, you know, between Washington and Nashville Predators. And I know I'm leaving out probably someone else, but yeah, it's pretty cool to look back on how long they've all been around, you know? So, but.
Yeah. And maybe this is just the young optimist to me, but maybe that is a sign that teams are starting to understand that a strength coach maybe in place long-term could have more benefit than having a new face in the weight room every 1 or 2 or 3 years.
Well, now it's become not just one. I mean, you always had, I think, you know, you had your strength coach with the philosophy, and then that was one resource that was totally understaffed, right? But now when you build these bigger performance departments, yeah, you got to keep that intact, because you can't just change the performance department all over again. I don't see baseball doing that with how deep their system goes with minor league systems and things like that. So, because once you change the strength coach, then you're changing what the American League is going to do and how you assess and evaluate and then develop and things like that. Lauren, is that fair to say?
Yeah, no, I would agree with that. And I know it's a big deal when, you know, the Pittsburgh Pirates in baseball actually just did that. They decided to like clean house and they're just starting from scratch. But at the same time, they've got a reputation in the city, and I think in the league is, you know, as being a team with not a lot of direction. So they're just kind of reaching for things. And I know the guy who got fired there was, you know, very experienced guy, great guy, people liked him. And, you know, it's just, he's been around long enough to know just nature of the beast.
Yeah. What were some of the most rewarding experiences? Like you mentioned, I saw a glimmer in your eye there for the Nordiques and what you did with that team, but give us a couple of the most rewarding things that's happened in your career as a hockey performance coach.
Well, I'll tell you what, probably, I mean, the Nordiques thing was huge. Like, I remember, like, I'll just talk about that for a second, because it was like probably the proudest day when we, you know, ended up first place, won that President's Trophy. Like, we were a young team. That was Mark Crawford's first year coaching. And we had a lot of young, really young, good guys on that team. And I remember going into New York, and we were favored against the Rangers, and then we lost. And, you know, you're flying back, and everybody said, like, this is it. Like, this team is done. So it was kind of like a happy, sad thing at the same time. So I'd been with them for 5 years and see them, you know, had them go through such bad times, such poor losing seasons, got us the opportunity to draft some pretty good young guys over that time. So that was really rewarding to go through that, even though it didn't end really well. But I got to say, my last year with the Montreal Canadiens was unbelievable. You know, like, the Montreal Canadiens are like the New York Yankees of hockey, right? I mean, they're just iconic. And all the Leaf fans out there listening, I'll put them a rung above the Toronto Maple Leafs. It's just, you know, what they have going in the dressing room, the respect for the history of it is crazy. But we made the playoffs on the very last day of the season there, you know, just kind of squeaked in. I want to say we tied our last game. We just got in. And then we went on a run that was incredible. We beat Washington, we beat Pittsburgh, and then we lost to Philadelphia in the conference final. We were, you know, we were 3 wins away from a Stanley Cup, you know, 3 wins from a Stanley Cup. And we, you know, I guess we flew in there by the seat of our pants, but the intensity and the grind of that playoff, those three series, it was something to be, I was really excited about and, you know, proud to be a part of that.
It's probably fun to see that the group just kind of gets so much closer too, right? During that type of run.
Yeah.
Very. I don't, you don't do it without it. You don't do it without it, that locker room being, you know,
no,
other than a Boy Scout. No, not, you know, so.
No, it was fun. It was fun. I mean, there's, and you know what, like moments too, like just getting jobs, when you get the call to get a job, you would know because you've had your job too long. Yeah. But when you know, when you get it, when somebody calls you for a job, like I remember, like I work for, you guys know, I work for Ben Roethlisberger now, kind of his sports performance director, if you will. And I remember, you know, getting the call from his agent, and I was running the facility for Penn's Elite in Pittsburgh with Gary Roberts. And the guy's like, yeah, I'm Ben Roethlisberger's agent. He lives up in the area. You need somebody to help him out. Your gym's kind of close. Like, tell me what you do. And so I kind of tell him, and he's like, well, tell me your background, Lauren. And we start talking. He said, really? He said, let me tell you what I'm really looking for. And, you know, we got into this long conversation that he wanted an exclusive guy to, you know, be at Ben's beck and call and, you know, really help him with his nutrition and his training and what have you. And I'm like, I was just like blown away, because I always kid around. I've always been a football guy trapped in hockey.
Yeah.
So this was kind of like a dream job. So, you know, when you get those jobs, when you get those calls, they're really kind of proud moments, and a credit to everybody who helped me get to wherever, you know, the players, the coaches, the GMs, who brought those experiences to me. I think they're certainly all part of that.
And on the flip side, what are some difficult experiences being a strength coach in the NHL?
Difficult. Well, early on, just, you know, communicating and getting guys, getting buy-in was a bit of a challenge. I mentioned earlier about the relationships with the medical trainers and equipment guys and strength coaches. I mean, it was, I don't want to call it volatile, but I remember once I won't tell you what team, or I won't tell you who was involved, but we had a player who suffered, I want to say it was a grade 2 or 3 MCL sprain. And he went out to, away from the team to see a doctor for kind of a second opinion. And he came back and the doc said he should be able to get going. But the team, the medical staff, didn't want him to do anything for a week, like just, you know, shut it down. And he called me. I remember it was on a Sunday night at like 7 o'clock. We were off. He's like, Goldie, he goes, meet me at the gym. I need your help. I'm like, okay. So we get there and I do some work on him and got his knee moving and got him doing things he hadn't been able to do for, you know, almost a week. And he felt amazing. Anyways, the next day we're in the medical room. I come walking in. And the trainer kind of looks at me, he goes, Goldie, he goes, I can't believe how good he looks today. He looks good. He feels good. Like, what did you do to him? And I kind of went through the steps of what I did. And you know, one of the things I did, like, I'll tell you guys, it's not a big deal, but I started doing some ART, some soft tissue work, you know, above and below where the sprain was. And that released enough tissue to allow him to move and got him some mobility and stability. And he just felt good, right? And when I mentioned that, he went off his rocker. He goes, no, you can't do that. You can't do that. I'm like, and I just about lost my mind. I started poking him in the chest. I said, can I swear on this thing? I said, are you freaking?
Hey, you can swear. Please swear. This is hockey. It's a hockey podcast. Come on.
I said, are you fucking kidding me right now? I'm poking him in the chest. I said, did you hear what you just said to me? He said, he feels better and he looks better. I said, get away from me. And I walked in my office and, you know, I couldn't take it anyway. So, you know, so that was, you know, that was in the old days. That was, you know, some of the things that I had to deal with. I'm sure that wouldn't happen today, but that was that's one thing that stuck in my mind. That, you know, like, at the end of the day, we're all just trying to help guys. I'm not trying to, hey, guess what, Goldie got him off the injury list. Like, we're just trying to help the players with whatever skill set that we have, right?
Absolutely. I agree with you 100%. One of the things too that you said earlier, Goldie, is you had to take time throughout your whole career, because it just doesn't happen when you first break in. So you have to take time to have those hard conversations, and it's with players, it's with management, it's with scouts, it's with coaches, you know, and we don't talk about that. And I think in our profession enough, it's like, okay, you get the job, you know, you have all these certifications, you have all this periodization in your mind, you have all these exercises brewing, but when the shit hits the fan, how are you going to communicate with that coach? You know, it's like, you can either, you're going to have to take your lickings, but you also got to know how to back your program up and understand, okay, how are you going to communicate why you're doing what you're doing? Even if you do that beforehand, you still may have to have a difficult conversation, you know?
Yeah. And you know, I was really lucky because I was older too. Like, you know how, like a lot of guys, right? Mike, a lot of guys go home, they've got their own strength coaches, they work within the off season.
Yeah.
And having been around for a long time, I know a lot of guys. And so if, you know, so-and-so is working with, you know, Matt Nichol in Toronto or Scott Livingston in Montreal or, you know, Chris Schwartz in Ottawa, they could say, oh yeah, you know, Goldie's a good guy. Like, do what he says, because he's not going to do you wrong. That was always helpful also, you know. Yeah. And some of these guys knew of some of the, you know, the players that I'd worked with in the past. And I was lucky to, you know, work with some pretty high profile guys over the years. So when you do that in the private sector also, that gets you a little buy-in with these guys, you know, also. Yeah. So.
You know, I've always wanted to ask you, like, so when you went from St. Louis to Montreal in your NHL career, what were you doing collaterally? Like, did you have a private clientele that you worked with that weren't hockey players? Were you doing with other athletes, maybe female athletes, you know, track and field, or?
Yeah.
Did you always have?
I always had something going. Like, before I got my, actually, I shouldn't say before, it was almost at the same time, I started a company called Strength Tech Fitness and Wellness Consultants. And we did workplace fitness and wellness. And we had at one point in our heyday in the, early 2000s, we had like 14 corporate facilities across North America. Nortel was our biggest client. And actually we had a contract in San Jose. Nortel was in San Jose back in the day.
That's why the name sounds familiar. So yeah,
they were huge. So I had that going. So it was like different from the hockey. And then in I think it was 1998, I opened up the Athletic Conditioning Center in Ottawa. It was like the first, you know, sport performance place. We actually didn't allow, if you weren't an athlete, you couldn't train there. Mm-hmm. And so I saw a lot of athletes from, you know, football, hockey, skiing, soccer, basketball through that facility. And a lot of the clientele, a lot of my ex-NHL guys from Ottawa used to come in and train in there in the off season also.
Nice.
I was lucky. Like, you had to kind of, it wasn't full time. Like, Mike, I think you're probably working probably 11 and a half months out of the year, give or take. And
pretty much.
It'd be tough to have a business on the side, you know.
The off season, we have local kids, you know, come in, want to train. You help, you know, the young hockey players or some high school athletes. So I always kind of working for Mike early on. I always enjoyed that, you know, enjoyed my time in college based on the age group that you're dealing with, right? So I always kind of found a little bit of time to. I've always had small groups of guys, like five kids in the summertime, whether it be hockey or field hockey players, female soccer players, or you know, now it's baseball. Baseball is big in San Jose, California. So
yeah, for sure. So
yeah, and Lauren, you've done so much besides just coach teams. You know, you mentioned your business, Strength Tech. You've written books. What other skills outside of the technical strength conditioning skill set has been most valuable to you, whether in business communication or otherwise?
I'm an expert in CFL football history.
there's your football strength coach trapped in a hockey strength coach body right there. Yeah.
Oh gosh. I always like the kid about that because I'm a big, you know, I grew up with the CFL. That's my game. And, you know, all my friends and people and, you know, Ben, you know, like you're kind of working in the NFL now. Like, why do you want to watch a CFL? I'm like, cause that's what I grew up with. Like, that's what I looked up to. That's where my passion is, kind of thing. So I remember in Quebec, you know, most teams, like, you know, they have the football pool on Sundays and they put it up on the bulletin board. And I would always go up and write in all the CFL games to make sure guys could get their CFL picks. And I remember one time Joe Sakic is like, nobody watches a CFL. I said, Joe, come on. You're from BC. I know you're a BC Lions fan.
Right.
There we go. The biggest CFL fan in the world is Lauren.
Well, Ryan Getzlaff's brother did he play in Saskatchewan?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Chris Getzlaff.
See, David, you didn't know that.
I didn't even know Ryan Getzlaff had a brother.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, what year did he win a Stanley Cup in Anaheim?
07.
07.
Yeah. 07. Same year his brother won a Grey Cup.
No way.
There you go. I remember that. That's it.
That must have been a hell of a Stanley Cup party. Man, BC Cup party.
I prefer, you know, drinking from the Grey Cup. It's pretty impressive. I've actually drank them from both cups. So there you go.
All right. Well, you can go start the CFL Strength Podcast if you want.
Yeah.
We can talk about CFL over there.
There's not too many of those guys around.
Might be a very niche audience, but I think you could pull it off.
Yeah, sure.
Let's look ahead to the future. I guess the present tense now. What are you focused on? I know you mentioned you're training Ben, of course, but what other skills are you focused on developing and what's your day to day right now?
Personally, what I really focus on more than I have in the past are just more treatment techniques, if you will, like techniques, rehab, recovery, regeneration, methods to help guys recover from games more effectively, because we spend a lot of time doing that. And football is an easier sport to deal with that in that, because we only play once a week, right? Where hockey, you're, you know, what are you doing? You're regenerating. You're trying to maintain some strength and some speed power at the same time. I mean, it's a tough go. So I do a lot of reading and coursework. Actually, I took I was on Mike Boyle's winter seminar. Yeah, that was Mike had a great show. There was some really good people on there. So I got to highly recommend that to anybody who's looking for continuing education. And now, you know, with COVID and my, you know, strength tech kind of shut down till 2022, I'm actually, you know, I've kind of jumped on the bandwagon with Bridge Athletic and starting to create my programs through that app now, and hoping to be able to, you know, market, if you will, those programs to, you know, minor hockey kids anywhere, because with the internet now, I don't have to, you know, I don't have to print and mail anything anymore. We can actually just literally send it through the app and be able to communicate through the app. So I'm kind of getting my old body as technologically sound as I possibly can and be able to interact that way. But I will say, and the Bridge Athletic guys have been really great with me, but I've always done my programs on spreadsheets, and there's a part of me that wants to keep going back there, you know?
I agree. And I'm a Bridge guy too. They probably told you a lot about that, but yeah, I have that itch to do it sometimes too. You're right. Or at least lay it out in there.
Yeah. No, but they've been awesome. So you gotta teach the old dog new tricks, right?
That's right.
I hope you know a young person who can help you with tech stuff.
No, I got a 25-year-old son and a 22-year-old daughter.
You're set.
Yeah. Listen, I have a tough enough time trying to post something to my story on Instagram. So
is it really that hard? Come on. It's pretty intuitive.
It is that hard. It never works properly.
Lauren, what of all that's out, there's been, I think through COVID, like there's been this huge flux of great education, especially in the hockey world, right? And the conversations we've had, like on the podcasts and different coaches, like Anthony Donskoff jumps out into my mind of him getting a big group together to kind of discuss new trends and what technology is out there. What trees do you see us barking up that may not be the best ones? And what are some of the ones that, what are some good ones? And what are some that you're like, hey, we really need to look here for the health and performance of our hockey players, you know, men, male and female players, you know, is there something out there that like, I wish we'd give this, we should give this a little bit more thought, maybe a little more focus.
I think, I really think that, you know, trying to get away from the performance aspect of assessment, for the guys on your team versus assessing, like I was describing before, assessing what's limiting their ability to play and move properly. And I think that, you know, as we learn to focus more on that, I think we'll be able to, you know, bring more value to the players on the big team and, you know, bring awareness to the guys like on the AHL team and juniors are coming up and get exposed to, you know, development camps and what have you. And, you know, and you could see it out there. You look at the Supple Leopard book and
for those just, it's Kelly Starrett becoming a Supple Leopard for those who want to Google it.
Right. And you know, he's got his app with, I mean, he's got like probably
Ready State.
Right. The Ready State, thousands of hours of such applicable use for guys like us. Like, I mean, I think he's hitting a broader audience, but you think about, you know, competitive athletes and doing everything that they could possibly do with a foam roller or a ball or some bands to enhance movement and then our ability to assess it. And I don't know if you got exposed to it, Mike, but I actually took Scotty Livingston's reconditioning level one.
Yeah, it's on my radar. It looks really good. Yeah.
It's really good. And it's really all about, you know, movement and ensuring that joints are healthy and you know, you set your athlete up in a position where he can be successful. And that doesn't mean a 250 kilo back squat. It just means mobility, movement, fluidity, health, longevity in the sport. And I think that's where we're going to be able to bring value. And I think that's how our jobs are going to, you know, really focus on as we keep moving forward.
Yeah, that's part of the art, isn't it? Like, you don't always need to add horsepower to the engine, right? Like, sometimes it just needs to, if we're mechanics, you know, we're the pit crew and they're coming in for somewhat of a tune-up in a way, and it's going to get them moving better. And maybe they'll be able to express their speed and power in better ways just by taking away some of the restriction, right?
Yeah. Like, how strong do they need to be?
Right.
They're already strong. How much stronger do they need to be before you compromise what they really need to be able to do? Mm-hmm. So,
have you gotten into the tracking world, the on-ice tracking, at all towards the end of your time in Montreal? Or do you even look at that now? Or
No. I have not looked at that. It wasn't, I don't think anybody was using it in 2010. Ironically, Adam Douglas, who used to work for me at the Athletic Conditioning Center in Ottawa, he kind of comes from my tree. There's a bunch of guys off of my tree who've been done really, really well. I mean, he's the guru with regards to tech. And, you know, if I ever got a job with another team, he would probably be the guy I'd want to bring in and work for me, not for Catapult, but for me,
right?
To help me with that. But it's interesting. Like, I know the Steelers are big data guys. They're tracking everything. Everybody's wearing Catapult, and they're, you know, tracking their, you know, their speed, their movements to the right, their movements to the left, backwards movements, speed, and they've got it down to a science where they know if they get too close into that red, what they've defined as the red zone, they know there's greater potential for hamstring injuries in their football athletes. So, you know, I think it's something that's evolving. I wish I was still with a team so I could get more involved with that, because I think that's the best environment to really be able to learn from it. And in Pittsburgh, actually, you know, I was really close with Andy and Alex Trinka and you know, I'd follow him around, Andy, a lot, most days, just looking and see what he's doing with his data and how he's collecting it and tracking it. And I'm like, you just need a guy for that now.
I know. Yeah, that's very much the truth. That's for sure. Yeah. And those positions are being developed for teams, you know, a sports science guy. And even on the coaching side, there's unbelievable technology. Like the Sport Logic will track battles won off a forecheck.
Right.
How are they doing this? You know, so you can take, technically you can take and correlate this guy's battles won to his strength levels. And you know, if you can marry the two and really bring it together, it's really interesting. So there's some deep hockey analytical data that's just not, you know, plus minus or course or any of that crap. Like it's right. Okay. You know, how fast is this guy going off the rush and back check speed and all that kind of stuff. So,
Yeah. It's evolved. I would almost be afraid to have to just kind of jump into that. Right. Like I'd want to have somebody with me who was an expert to translate it all, if you will. And,
You need a unicorn. You need a strength coach / data guy, you know, who can pick the visiting team up at night.
That's it.
100%. Mike, I'd love if you could send us, we'll include some links in the show notes for resources on that data stuff. That sounds super interesting.
It's pretty well.
Yeah, that'd be cool. Goldie, I'm calling you by your nickname now because I've caught on to that. I was going to ask you about aerobic training, but we covered that in a great article for our website. So if you haven't read that, that'll definitely be linked in the show notes. Instead, I want to ask you more of like a philosophical, conceptual question. What advice would you give to a young, driven, let's assume they're already hardworking, already smart, aspiring strength coach or pro strength coach? And what advice would you suggest they ignore that's very common?
My advice would be like, everybody has this dream of, you know, being in the NHL. And, I mean, once you're there and you're established, I think it's a healthy place to be. But I think for a lot of people, and I don't want this to sound bad, but I think it might be unrealistic for some people, and they could have a very successful career, a very rewarding career, could be even more impactful on their clients and have a financially successful career by not thinking about that dream of going to the NHL, you know? So I think it's, you know, like I've always had this dream of wanting to work for an NCAA team. Like I'd like to go back, like, you know, I don't even know what's going, you can call it going back. I mean, there's still.
I'd go back.
Yeah, like I would love to work for an NCAA team. And actually, you know what? Not too many people know this, but I actually interviewed for a job with the University of Nebraska at Omaha.
Yeah.
Omaha. I interviewed for that job and I really wanted it. I couldn't make it work financially, unfortunately. Like I'm an old guy, right? I've got kids, I've got expenses and what have you. Like if I was, you know, 25 to 30 years old, I would have taken that job. Like, I mean, what an experience that would have been. You know, they had a brand new rink, brand new weight room, be able to step in there and make an impact on those guys, lead those guys, teach those guys, help them make that jump. Because there's one thing I'll remember is when I had my athletic conditioning center, during times when I wasn't working in the National Hockey League, there is nothing more fulfilling because you develop deeper relationships in the off season with some of these guys, is seeing a guy when you start coaching him up in Pee Wee and Bantam and Tier 2 Junior and Junior, and he's drafted. Like, you know, there's a lot of guys, like I did that with Zach Bogosian, and, you know, it's, I've got that picture of me, Zach, and his brother at the NHL draft here in Ottawa. It's so fulfilling to see that happen. And that doesn't always happen in the NHL, right? There's so much player movement and what have you. But, you know, so people who have that dream, I mean, they could live that dream and not make the NHL. Because I'm sure you get it, Mike. I get guys emailing me or texting me or reaching on social media. How do I get to the NHL? I want to work in the NHL.
Yeah.
And I want to talk them out of it.
Yeah. I feel that way sometimes too, you know, and those jobs are, these college jobs are, they're awesome. You have a set amount of time generally to be with the player. It's not like he's going to get traded, yeah. You know, and you still have compliance to deal with, just like you have a CBA to deal with. But, you know, some of these jobs, if you're at a state school, they offer a pretty damn good retirement too.
Yeah. So,
you know, those should never be overlooked. And it's a hell of a brand of hockey too. And I know I still have a lot of great connections, both from the Badger women team and the men's team, that when I was at Wisconsin before here, we still have great relationships and stay in touch with each other. And yeah, it's a great setting. I also began my career in college working with all the athletic programs. So it's kind of like, you know, it's almost where I was raised in a way. So I do. And now that I have kids, it would be kind of cool. Like, as much as fun as it is for them to come in the locker room, Lauren, you know, like, and run around with Brent Burns and Patty Marlowe and those guys, like, you get, and their kids, like, you get a chance at the college level. It's like, you have massive facilities they can run around and destroy.
Facilities. And I don't know if the deal is there where you can send your kids to that university.
Sometimes there is there. Yes, absolutely. As long as they get in.
Yeah, yeah. So professional sports, like it, there's a lot of glory in it, and it looks great on paper. But young coaches should look and consider alternatives, not because it's a lower level, but because it might be a better fit from a life perspective.
Mike, can I ask you the same question? What's advice you would give to a young driven strength coach, and what advice you think they should ignore?
Well, 100%, like, I think you have to keep learning, but you can't get overwhelmed with everything that's out there. If we tried to absorb everything, we would, our thoughts would be twisted and we wouldn't know which end is up, you know? So you have to have a real good network to help you process the information too. Like, what's good, what's bad, what's out there now that could be effective and whatnot. So I would say to that young strength coach, like, keep learning, but you also have to have a real strong philosophy of what you want to do. For me, I was blessed. Like, I worked for Stegen, Boyle, and Glenn Harris, and I had some great friends, network, and mentors along the way. So I kind of molded my philosophy through the successes of theirs, but also learned from their failures, you know? And I still do that. To my fault, I think I lean on that too much and try and don't read as much as I should, you know, at times, you know. I always feel like I'm behind with what's on the internet, and I have to temper myself to say, all right, you can't keep up with all this stuff, you know, but when you can get to it, you got to get to it. You got to see what's out there and not get stale. Right.
Mike, don't feel bad. I can't tell you how many times I see a great study on Twitter. I open it up and I email it to myself, and I probably have 300 of those emails that I need to read, like, all great studies. It's tough. Unless you are, like, working in that university setting, it's hard to stay on top of all the research, especially when you have a job, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And families and all that. And absolutely. So I would say the thing that the young strength coaches shouldn't listen to is that, because you've been somewhere, then you should get this instant gratification, you know? So, like, and look, I'm a Springfield grad. I love Springfield, and maybe sometimes Springfield, like, is a little bit, they could be a culprit of it. Kids will finish and be like, okay, where's the job now? No. Like, you're going to have to go to a bunch of other experiences till you become, you know, experienced and hardened until right now you're more fully prepared with all these different experiences, you know. They're only going to benefit you. I think that through instant gratification, sometimes it's like, all right, I've worked here. I worked for Mike Boyle. Now I can go to the NHL, or I've worked for Exos. Now I can go to, you know, the MLS or something, like, or Major League Baseball. Yeah. You know, I think you have to find that value in those experiences. If I had one of my experiences, I wouldn't be here, but I think the combination of everything, it allowed me to get here, maybe stay here.
Well, I think that's a great place to wrap up, Lauren. I'm going to give you final thoughts, any asks of the audience, places where people can reach you, all that stuff.
Well, I'm pretty accessible right now. I don't have a lot going on. Football season's over. I'm not specifically working in hockey right now. So, you know, people can reach out to me on Twitter. I just under, they can search Lauren Goldenberg, same on Instagram. Those are my two main sources where people can see me. You know, I want to steal a line that I've heard Matt Price use, where Matt's always said he's more of a shopper rather than a producer. But I love the aspects of social media. Every once in a while, I'll see something that I might throw some comments out there, or I'll throw some ideas about exercises that I'll pop out, or you can always find out what's going on in the CFL through my account also.
Well, up to date CFL info with Lauren Goldenberg.
Yeah, I mean, that's you found your niche, man. That's you.
There you go.
Gentlemen, thank you both so much for having this conversation. It's been a joy to just listen and get to sit on this and ask a few questions. So Lauren or Goldie, I think I'm just going to call you Goldie now. Goldie, thank you so much. Thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate it.
Thanks, Goldie.
You too. It's been awesome.
Thank you, Mike and Lauren, once again for doing this episode. This one was a lot of fun. Listeners, thank you so much for listening. Of course, it's not possible without you. We will have links to everything discussed and show notes and all of that stuff at prohockeystrength.com. And if the spirit moves you, we would really appreciate it if you could leave us a review on wherever you're listening to this podcast. Once again, thanks for listening, and we're going to have a lot more exciting episodes like this to look forward to with our SCAF alumni series. So hopefully we will see you soon.